Before we start, can you clap twice for me? That was weak, man.
Bro, I'm holding the mic. I'm going to hold it right
here.
Do
a snap. Yeah, there we go. All right. Okay, cool. We're only a few weeks away from some very important January World Cup qualifiers that could see the U.S. men's national team go a long way towards qualifying for the 2022 World Cup over in Qatar. Greg Berhalter has just released a list of 19 names that will serve as the preparation camp ahead of the actual release of the World Cup qualifying roster. And I have brought in Justin Almenrud from Soccer House to help me. Let me click. There we go. There you are, Justin.
What's up?
Help me kind of decipher what's going on right here and kind of set some expectations as we move towards this all-important January World Cup qualifying at the end of the month. So, Justin, we were talking a little bit about how December's kind of been like this nothing month where a lot of stuff has happened. Nothing has happened at the same time. How are you feeling right now as we head into this extremely important World Cup qualifying cycle?
Bro, I am desperate for some games, man. I'm desperate. I mean, in the time that's passed, we have more right back depth. That's pretty much the only notable thing that happened in U.S. soccer, I feel like. And then like some injuries and then just the nothing burger, as you said, of that December camp and that game. I'm so excited for games to be back. I feel like I have all new type of gratefulness for having games again. We had so many matches in 2021. So it's like, you got spoiled, you know. It was like so many years of just not having any games, and then that mattered, you know. And just so excited that we're gonna have a team back. This roster, you know, it's kind of a little bit of the same. It's kind of the guys you kind of expect, but there's some new guys there for sure. And I'm just ready for the real roster to come up, ready for our guys to get to the U.S. safely and healthy, and we'll go from there.
And you've been to a lot of the home World Cup qualifier games, so you kind of have an idea of like what the emotion is like on game day and how that's going. What are your thoughts on on this home field advantage that we're going to expect in January when we go to these two very, very cold venues?
I mean, the weather is definitely a new thing. I mean, Cincinnati was pretty cold, but not really. I mean, it was like, I was born and raised in Florida. So my, my capability with cold is not up to par with some of those Northerners, but I'm definitely not going to the Minnesota game. I'm chickening out of that, but we are going to the next game in Columbus against El Salvador. I'd say it's been really cool to see generally, I think you can tell from just watching on television as well, like the team has gotten more comfortable, more confident. I think the fans in the ground has been much more behind the team. I think particularly we started out the qualifying with the home game in Nashville. And I don't think I've ever been more scared for something in my life. I mean, it was like, I think it was right after the El Salvador away game. You're like, we have to go to Honduras. And then we get there and we only found out that Weston McKennie wasn't available. Like, I don't even remember. It's been such a blur, but like you kind of felt the eeriness of like, this could go wrong at any moment. And then we got the breakthrough goal with Brendan Aaronson. The entire place just like, it was probably the loudest, other than the Pulisic goal against Mexico, the loudest I had heard the stadium get just because of all the pent up just like stress, and the performance wasn't good. We had people playing in the eight positions that we shouldn't have had. But that's a whole nother story. And then from there, I felt like you went to the Austin game, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was so in, you got to see USA versus Jamaica.
Yeah, you got to see the part of like the turnaround. And then we were at the U.S. Costa Rica game. And I mean, they have like the typho going up and we're still like doing like the whatever, like awkward Viking chant, like in the crowd. And we're not even done. And it's like, oh, we're down a goal. And so I feel like we felt like the pensiveness of that, but comparing that to when we actually got to the U.S.-Mexico game in Cincinnati, like incredible atmosphere. But you could feel like a bit more confidence. And I don't know if it was because we've beaten Mexico twice the year already, but like, I didn't feel like worried. I was like, I feel like this team is going to come and put in a good performance, bounce back after I think that was right after the, was it Panama away? I'm getting it all mixed up. It's been a long time. We need these games back. But yeah, man, it was incredible. Just, I'm so excited to get back to these games, but yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, and I think what we learned is that the best 11, the starting 11 that the U.S. men's national team can put out there can really go out and play with the best of CONCACAF. The issue is that whenever we have to rotate, which we'll have to do in this window, are there guys that can step up and replace that MMA midfield or Ricardo Pepi at striker or, you know, the center backs, the wing backs? And looking at this preparation camp roster, is there anybody on that list that you know, you were excited to see or gave you a moment of pause?
Yeah, I mean, I was watching back your video when it came out just yesterday, and I completely agree with you. I think Jordi Mihailović is the guy for me that seems like the most like plug in and play, had a great season in MLS. I'll admit, like, when he first started popping up on rosters, like, I guess like 2019 or whenever it was, I didn't know much about him. I just kind of was like, I don't even really remember much about his performances, but particularly his season in MLS this year, he definitely captured my attention. And I feel like you said, man, I feel like we're getting to that point where Legette didn't play in the last window. The performances just have not been up to scratch. And I feel like there is definitely, I feel like there's an inherent bias because I'm just kind of tired of seeing him. Like, I haven't seen anything new where I'm like, ooh, like, except for that moment in his defense against Canada, that little like turn and pass, he was like linking up with Aronson, released Pulisic, and it kind of came off the post. Like, that was, I was like, ooh, if he does that more, I'm like, I'm all in for this. But like, just haven't seen enough from him. Don't need to see him in that eight position anymore, in my opinion. Same with Roldan. Mihailović, I like Cole Bassett a lot as well. I'm excited to see him get just like more minutes. I feel like a lot of it with Greg is like familiarity and just trust. And, you know, I'm not claiming to be the coach. Like, he's the guy who's seeing them in training during these camps. And, you know, if he's seeing things that we're not seeing, he's clearly built up trust with these guys. Like, I do trust him, but at the same time, I mean, some of our away performances, and like you said, when we've rotated, it's just not been good enough. So I think it's really, particularly looking at the midfielders, I think that's really where things are wide open. I think DeJuan Jones, it's cool to see him at left back, but I still think Bello is probably ahead of him just based on just general familiarity with the system. It'll be interesting to see how Aaron Long's doing, like kind of where he's at in his recovery. I feel like in my head, I'm like, oh, I'm good with Miles Robinson and Chris Richards like for life at this point, but like, I'm not sure if that's necessarily where Greg sees it. I don't know where he ranks Aaron Long in that conversation. It's interesting. So
he wasn't healthy enough to play in that game against Bosnia Herzegovina, but he's comes in for this camp. You got to imagine that if he wasn't healthy enough to play in that Bosnia game, he's probably not going to be able to go.
Definitely not. Yeah.
For World Cup qualifying. And I'm not saying that like he could be healthy enough, but like there's no way you would start this guy or play this guy after not playing a year of soccer. Like there's got to be
rust,
you know.
Yeah, his start to the season with Red Bulls are going to be very important. Like, and I'll like I feel like I haven't really had too much of a reason to watch New York Red Bulls since Caden Clark kind of like cooled off. So it'll be really interesting to see like when he gets back into the team, get some games under his belt, definitely heading towards the summer. In my opinion, for some reason, I'm just like, I feel like he's going to be on that World Cup like roster, like when we're actually heading to Qatar. But I selfishly don't want to leave anyone else off of it for him. Is that wrong? But I feel really confident in these other guys.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. You know, we always talk about the 23. The 23, mm-hmm. the 23, because that's what you classically bring to a World Cup. But we've seen expanded rosters all the way through World Cup qualifying, and we've seen that COVID has been decimating rosters across the world and causing cancellations and all this stuff. I wonder if there's going to be expanded rosters going into World Cup. Is that something we might see? Could we possibly see 27, 30 guys being brought into a World Cup that would allow for maybe an Aaron Long to make that cut? I don't know. It's something that's just kind of out there, just considering that what we're seeing with the virus that led to an expansion of rules during World Cup qualifying has not subsided at all. And if anything, is getting even having
crazier,
more
yeah,
of an impact on the game. So yeah. it's something to consider. Some of these guys that we think are on the bubble of the roster may not necessarily be on the bubble. Maybe they're more in the camp than we think they are.
Yeah, and you mentioned it in the last video. Like, he keeps talking about the group. He keeps talking about the group. And in my eyes, I think that is a positive thing. If you can have, say, a group of like 30, 32 guys that are all super familiar, who obviously we have a big drop off between, like, I think the first 11 that we all pick, and maybe like those first like 12 to 13 guys, like depending on if you see Tim Weah as the starter or kind of whatever, like I feel very confident that that team, and the US has a very weird constant problem. I feel like I was talking to my buddy back in Nashville, like we constantly just play to the competition. Like, and it's just like this like mentality thing, I feel like, that's just rooted in us. Like, I feel like we could, I'd feel more confident putting the US against like some type of European superpower that they're going to put in a good performance and aren't going to be like, if we put like our best 11, I just feel something about like, I feel like they're going to put in a good game against them. But then you put them against like Guatemala and I'm like, I have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, like, I think familiarity is a very important thing in all sports, not just soccer, but,
yeah.
But in whenever it comes to a national team, getting those minutes together really helps. And we saw the U.S. from like the first time we really saw the MMA midfield in World Cup qualifying was that game against Jamaica. And it was one of the better games that we'd seen the team play up to that point. But then you fast forward a few matches to that Mexico match, and they were clicking on all cylinders. They looked really, really good. So they had the Jamaica match, they had the Costa Rica match, and then they had the Mexico match. And I wonder if some of these other players who are very talented but have not yet been a part of the group, guys like Gianluca Busio, maybe Daryl Dike, maybe Joe Scally, who we haven't seen yet. If I think these players are very talented, but is there going to be a ramp up process where it's going to take them a few games in order to really get in the mix and be able to contribute in a way that's there's not as much drop off where we're leaving that MMA midfield and rotating?
Yeah. And I think it goes back to the thing we were all harping on back in, like, I guess the last three game window. Like, rotation is a natural part of these three game qualifying windows. You don't know who's going to get a positive test. We need the big group, but like the over rotation is kind of what Greg's kind of lean back on for some reason. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel like this window, particularly with how Busio has been playing with Venezia, like I'd love to see Tesman involved. I'd love to see Luca Della Torre. I mean, he hasn't even had a chance at all other than the end of that Jamaica game. Is he going to get the chance? Like, are some of these MLS guys who have these extra weeks with Greg, are they going to once again kind of, like, I feel like just judging off how Greg has gone in the past, I'm a little concerned that perhaps he just will feel comfortable with the guys that are there. Like some guys like Cole Bassett, I wouldn't be mad seeing him sneak onto the roster, but at the expense of a guy like De La Torre, I'd be a little bummed about that. But
I kind of spoke about this in my last video, but yeah, this is a situation where I'm assuming we're going to bring one of the bigger rosters that we've brought just because of the COVID variant and what it's doing to players right now. I'm assuming Greg's going to see kind of what's happened in some of the previous World Cup qualifying windows where we've lost players and really bring a big roster. But at the same time, you know, Legette's been that player that everybody's been looking at for a long time. In the last World Cup qualifying window, he didn't get any minutes. He seemed frustrated about that. And he did not have a good season over for the Los Angeles Galaxy. He gets that not move over to New England. For me, if there was a time whenever Legette was going to get dropped from this roster, it would be right now, especially whenever you have a guy like Luca Della Torre who is in form. And even if Greg Berhalter thinks that Legette and Della Torre, maybe Legette's a little bit ahead of him, like, you got to imagine some of that rust from not playing for a while is going to boost up Della Torre. Or if it's Tanner Tesman, or if it's, I guess, Georgi Mihailovic is more or less on the same plane as far as playing time as Sebastian Legette. But yeah, that's the thing that I'm looking at right now. And you bring up Tanner Tesman, and that's something I'm fascinated with. You know, for me, I don't think that this window is Tanner Tesman's window. I think that he needs a little bit more time with Venezia getting seasoned. But at the same time, I did not think that last window was going to be Gianluca Busio's window. And he got brought in, and he gets that start against Jamaica. And Greg Berhalter even mentioned in one of the press conferences that he sees Gianluca Busio as almost a starter for this team. So he is paying attention to these players. And he is willing to make those changes whenever he sees necessary. It's just a question of who's it going to be this time? Is he going to go with Leggett, or is he going to give one of these other guys an opportunity? Because we haven't really gotten into it yet, but we've got three games coming up, and it's one of those windows where, you know, it's a bunch of games in a short period of time, and they're very cold, but they're very important.
Yes.
In fact, let's kind of move into this right now. So on January 27th, we've got El Salvador at home in Columbus. On January 30th, we've got Canada away in Ontario. And then on February 2nd, we have Honduras in St. Paul, Minnesota. Now, the key thing here is, you know, everybody always says you got to win your home games and tie on the road. Well, the U.S. is in second place in World Cup qualifying. Canada is in first. The U.S. is sitting on 15 points. So if we do end up winning those two home games and even lose away to Canada, we'll still end up with 6 points in that window. It'll put us at 21 points, which is would put us a long, long way towards World Cup qualifying. So at least in my opinion, for me, these El Salvador and Honduras games, these home games are must wins. And then you consider the records. El Salvador has one win and three draws and one loss. Not a good cycle for El Salvador. Honduras, even worse, 0 wins, 1 draw, 3 losses. So these are two of the worst teams in World Cup qualifying in this cycle. So if you're Greg Berhalter and you're kind of planning things out, how are you approaching this World Cup qualifying window, knowing that the entire fan base is desperate to beat Canada? That Canada
and we will not hear the end of it if we lose to Canada.
Canada's been
even if we draw, they won't shut up. So yeah.
Oh yeah. So how do you if you're Greg Berhalter, how do you kind of approach this window?
Bro, they can't pay me enough for that job. I honestly don't know, man. I feel like a lot of these problems would have been solved had we not had the draw in Nashville against Canada, because then you have your 3 points there. I mean, it'd be a whole different table, honestly, in that situation. And
we'd be sitting at 17 points. Canada would have 15 points.
It'd be so nice. It'd be cozy right now.
We'd basically be qualified. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll just move on from that. Like, I think you're right, man. I think what makes me worried, because the opponents, like, no disrespect to El Salvador or Honduras, but if we put our best 11 in those two home games, let's say if we just, like, rotate in Canada for some reason, but we put our best team out for those two home games. On paper, I have no doubts in our mind that we're going to get the results there. I think the weather, particularly in St. Paul, I think a lot of people have talked about it. It just doesn't make any sense that we're adding this wild card into the mix. Like, I cannot fathom it, other than for like the Instagram photos that they're going to have like snowy, maybe a Pulisic, the scruffle will have a little bit of snow in it. That'll be a good photo. But other than that, if we don't get 3 points in that game, I'm going to be, the whole fan base will be furious. And that really, you said it, like, this is the last window before the home stretch. Getting these points is massive. We do not want to have to go to Mexico, go away to Costa Rica, where we've been, like, we've never won there, right? Like, never won away there or something. Yeah. Like, these games are crucial. I think kind of where I'm at, where someone, you know, I think he gets a little bit of stick for different reasons. Mostly, I feel like when he plays as an eight, but I feel like Kellen Acosta will actually be super important this window. Like, his game, whatever game that's going to be, most likely, if he rotates in as a starter for Tyler Adams, who, knock on wood, will be healthy and not sick, like, will just be good to go for these three games. Like, I feel like that game with the rotation, I do feel like it's going to be Canada, unless maybe it's El Salvador. Like, I feel like the game in Honduras, I want, like, guys who are ready to fight. So maybe, I guess, now that I'm saying this, maybe the cogs are turning in my head here. Like, that game, assuming it's going to be freezing, I feel like that game I could see an approach more similar to kind of the Gold Cup, kind of like those strong guys who are going to kind of fight it out, a little less flashy, because we don't know what the playing surface is going to be like. I feel like it's going to be a little bit easier to kind of assume what it's going to be like in Columbus. Like, it's going to be cold, but not on the same level.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you bring the best team out, you start the window strong, you get those 3 points on the board, you go to Canada, and Now here's my answer. So in Canada, I would try and bring the same roster, like the same lineup as much as you can. Maybe you do rotate in a Busio. If Greg feels like he's ready for that type of game, maybe you rotate a winger. I don't know. It really depends on a lot of things. For me, is how is Gio feeling? How ready is he?
Yeah, that's a really important thing heading into this window.
Yeah, because I think, he's not necessarily going to be on the bench for this next game.
That's the tweet that I saw, is that he's ready, but they're not going to include him in this lineup for this weekend, but he's going to be ready to go after that. So that gives him, let's see, the 27th. So that gives him 2-3 weeks in order to really ramp up. So we'll see.
And I don't know who you start. Like, if you have Gio and if you have Tim Weah available and healthy, then the rotation for me, like, it's really, if we have all of our players, the problem for me is never like the first string to that second string in most positions other than the six. I feel like even though Greg took some time to figure it out, like, I feel like it's very evident to everybody who those people are. And I feel confident with various rotations on that. And I feel like in the first 3-game window, I think Miles Robinson started all 3 games. Like, there's not a reason that these players, if they're healthy, if they're in good condition and they're ready to go, that some players couldn't play all 3 games, obviously. And these are huge games. Everyone's going to be wanting to play them. I don't think it's going to be that question. I think it's just going to be how they evaluate the fitness of the players. But I think the fitness of Weah and Gio, like, particularly if you're wanting to theoretically maybe play Reyna at an 8 position on one of those games, but you like have Tim Weah start on the right wing for El Salvador. Like, there's so many questions that are answered if those guys are all available. If they're not, like, if they are available, like your rotation game, you put Brendan Aaronson back out there, you know, who's been electric for the US. Like, you just, you know what you're going to get with him. He's the luxury version of Paul Arriola. And I do feel like someone I think who will make this roster, and I think you mentioned in your last video, I do think Jordan Morris, if he's ready to go, if Greg evaluates him in this camp, I feel like he's an upgrade on Paul Arriola, and I don't think anyone would complain. I don't think Conrad De La Fuente, unless, I think they're playing today or they're about to play.
I don't think he's in, like, the starting lineup. I just checked that right before we...
unless he scores like a hat trick today, I don't think he's like in the conversation right now. And I think it's fine. He's growing. He's got some really positive elements to his game, but clearly... the final ball, the final, the like goals and assists is just not there yet.
So you're going for 9 points in this window. You really think that this Canada game is one that we have to win. I want to reverse the question to you. Something that I always think about. If you're Canada in this window, of course, are coming in number one in World Cup qualifying. They're playing the same teams as us. They're playing Honduras first, then they have us at home, and then they're playing El Salvador. You're
both of those are away, right?
Yeah. The USA is their only home game. So if you're Canada,
envy that.
No, but at the same time, these are the most beatable Honduras and El Salvador teams that we've seen in quite some time. They're not playing really well. So who knows? Sometimes we see at the end of World Cup qualifying, the effort is not as much there from some of the teams who are already out. Sometimes it makes them even more effort. We'll see what ends up happening there. But if you're Canada, Canada's not a team. I can't recall the last time Canada qualified for a World Cup. They're sitting in first place in World Cup qualifying right now. If they're just like us. If they get 6 points from this window, it'll just about solidify their World Cup 2022 bid. They'll just about be qualified. So if you're Canada, do you bring your biggest guns for that USA match, or do you save them for the away games to Honduras and El Salvador in order to get those 6 points?
Well, I think the luxury that they don't have, they have a lights out attack, best attack in CONCACAF. I mean, just unreal players. And that's great for the whole region. It's great for the budding rivalry for sure between us and them. But yeah, I think when it comes to like their second string guys, it's a bit more of a cliff. That being said, 2 away games against winnable opponents, like, I think it's very possible that, they do rest a couple guys. I mean, another question.
We saw that in Nashville. In Nashville, they didn't start Jonathan David.
Had Kyle Larin, and he scored, he scored their goal. And, like, the same COVID questions come up with them, too. You know, they have a lot of players a lot of stars also coming from Europe, a lot of travel. I know Alphonso Davies, I think he's out right now with COVID. So that should mean he'll be back in the camp, but you just don't know with the other guys. So I think it's really hard for anyone right now, just with the situation, just globally, to know exactly or even have any sort of guesstimate on what they're going to do. But yeah, I do think it'd probably be wise, and I do think it'd be very likely out of those games that we both rest a couple players and rotate. And I think that does, I do think that's advantage us if the right rotation is done. And that's really, that goes to the coach and who he selects. Because yeah, if he rotates the right guys, I feel very confident. If we over rotate again, sayonara.
Yeah, it's really interesting. This is one of these, this Canada game is really growing into a game that it seems like it's really important for both fan bases, and it's really important for Canadian soccer especially.
Yeah, like, but it's not as important in the table necessarily. Like, we both walk away with a draw, yeah.
It's not as important, and if anything, putting all your eggs in the basket of this game could be a detriment to the end goal, which is qualifying for the World Cup. So it's super interesting to see how these two teams approach this, whether they're going to be influenced by that or not, or if they're going to be playing it safe. I think we've seen Greg Berhalter does have a propensity to play it safe in situations where it's necessary to play it safe. That's sort of been his MO throughout World Cup qualifying. I'm interested to see how Canada handles that as well. I want to move on to actual personnel decisions for this January World Cup qualifying roster. So I think the marquee position for the U.S. for a while now has been that striker position. And we've seen Ricardo Pepi kind of come out and emerge as our starting striker, the top dog at that position. But behind him has been a bit of a question mark. We've seen some interesting things happen in the last couple of weeks. Daryl DK secures that move over to West Brom in the championship. Matthew Hoppe seems to have recovered from whatever injury that he has, and he's back in training for Mallorca. I'm assuming that he's not going to be the guy, but who knows? Yeah. Assuming that there's going to be three strikers called into this January camp, who do you think that they're going to be?
It depends on if we're counting Jesus Ferreira as a striker, you know, because I think he's in camp starting, coming up right here. He's going to be around. Greg has loved him for a long time. Yeah, I definitely think three strikers. I think Pepe definitely is the only one of the European players that I'd say is a lock. I think DK, you know, he's had a little bit of time off now since Orlando City season's ended. New club. Playing very different style of soccer than what Greg and the U.S. are playing. And that clearly hasn't necessarily been enough to get him a lock spot at this point. I think Jordan Pefok is someone that I kind of just, he always goes kind of under the radar for me. But I mean, he's had some big goals for the U.S. with the Honduras Nations League game. I think personally, my preference would be Pepe, Pefok, and you have Jesus Ferreira as kind of like a false nine. Kind of, you could play alongside Pepe if you want. I like that balance of different types of forwards, like in the height and size of Pefok if you just need a goal kind of late in the game. I think more realistically, I feel like as far as strikers go, I think Zardes will be in the roster. And I don't like, it's not like we have the problem right now. And I think the reason people get frustrated is I feel like there's really not much of a gap in. Like, we have gaps in potential with players, but like where they're at like right now and how they're performing, they're kind of all like Pepe hadn't scored a league goal in forever. And then in his last US games, really, he had some good link up play in the last qualifying window. But other than that, really hasn't been like firing on all cylinders. So hopefully this move to Augsburg gets him back in fire. And we need that. He needs it just for his confidence, and Augsburg for sure. They just invested a lot of money. They need it too. So I think it's going to be Pepe. I think it'll be potentially Ferreira and Zardes as the three. And I don't necessarily have a problem with it. I don't feel like I need to see more Zardes, but it just feels like the writing's on the wall there. So I'm not going to fight it.
Yeah, we have a couple of guys who could potentially put their names on the list very easily in Daryl Dike and Josh Sargent. They're both Sargent has been at Norwich and just has not been good in the final third at all this season. Zero Premier League goals on the season.
Just breaks my heart.
If he puts one in the back of the net and starts to kind of just feel a little bit of juice going through him, I mean, he could be on this roster really quickly. I mean, Josh Sargent is a player that could go from a player that's not even called in to a player that's potentially the starting striker for the U.S. really quickly if you just turn it around. And sort of the
same
thing goes
with
Daryl Dike.
Yeah. It's all – everyone, in my eyes, I see it all on equal pegging. We don't have that obvious right now. Like, we have the obvious guys that are like, okay, these guys have potential. We thought Josh Sargent was that guy. And I hope for his sake, just like his, like, mentality and just, like, his personal well-being, that he does start firing a bit more. I mean – It's been rough, and it's like hard to see a player just that lack of confidence. It's hard, but yeah, like I mean, if he scored like 3 goals in 4 games or something, like he'd be right back in. And I mean, he's playing at a great level, you know. Like out of all these players, he's coming up against the best competition. So that's a part of like I think the struggles in Norwich is just a terrible, terrible team. But he hasn't really helped make it better, you know. And so I think until that changes, I just feel like he's kind of off the list, but I would love to see him turn around just because I do think he's got some really incredible quality, but I think right now he needs to get out of like the meme category and he needs to like become a striker again.
Yeah. I keep talking about like 2022 and about how time's running out. And I think it's happening for a lot of these players. Like in the previous video, I mentioned that it's put up or shut up time for George Bello, and somebody rightfully called me out in the comment section and said, how can you say that about a 19-year-old? And like, that is a valid thing to say, but I'm always thinking about in terms of the cycle and in terms of this particular cycle, there's a lot of players that we valued their potential heavily, but potential is no longer what we're looking at for these players. It is down to what can you offer the team right now? And you mentioned like Giassi Zardes is a player that has a low ceiling, but can offer something in a World Cup qualifier right now. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of these players. I mean, George Bello is one of them, and Josh Sargent is turning into one. Like, I think a couple years ago, we all thought that Josh Sargent certainly, whenever he went to Berman, was certainly going to be a part of the World Cup team heading into 2022. And it's we're reaching a point where Josh only has a few more months where he's got to pull it together or else he can risk not having a seat on that plane. I think another one that we're kind of coming to terms with right now is Caden Clark. We didn't mention Caden Clark when talking about the preparation camp, but you know, everybody thought Caden Clark was going to go over to Leipzig and maybe get a loan out to a team in Europe. It turns out he's getting a loan right back to New York Red Bulls. And, you know, he could have potentially been called into camp preparation or preparation camp, whatever you want to call it.
Camp Cupcake Part 2.
Yeah, he didn't. Greg opted to go with Mihailovic, Bassett, and Sebastian Legette and Christian Roldan. So apparently, even in that December, what do people call it? Camp Candy Cane. Even in the December,
I was calling it Camp Christmas, but it didn't hold on. So
even in that December camp, Caden apparently did not show out to the point where Greg decided to bring him in for this particular one. So time is running out for him as well. In order to get that plane ticket to 2022, there's a lot of players like that where time is just not on their side. Time is not on Jonathan Gomez's side. It's not on Matthew Hoppe's side. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Like, I think it's a weird situation that the U.S. is kind of unique in this situation. Like, our average age of our team is outrageously young.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think all of us, like during 2020, like you're in lockdown, you're like creating your little graphs with your formations. And we all like imagine, it's Sargent and Gio and Pulisic. And then it's like, it's easy. Like that's kind of the point of the process where we were all kind of, and I feel like even the coach, like we went through the whole Sarakin area where it's all, the only thing that we're doing is like bringing in just anyone who's like 18 and like has the US passport, you know, like I feel like we've had to go through a transition of like, okay, here's like our fantasy team. But in reality, now we're getting to the point of the process where it's like, okay, which players are here for now are ready for Qatar in November, which starts on my birthday, by the way, but I don't think I'm able to make it to Qatar. That seems like a very expensive trip. But now it's like, okay, which of these players is Greg kind of thinking, okay, these are talented guys like a Caden Clark. Like, It is funny. I feel like in soccer terms, I feel like different than other sports, like we have a tendency to like, oh, he's 21 and he's not doing this. It's like, that's ridiculous. Like these are still very young adults or just teenagers. And it's like their development is not always going to be linear. And particularly as our players take more difficult steps up, they're going to have setbacks. They're going to have times where they hit low spots. But I mean, you think of guys like Yuli Lainez, like I still rate him. I think he's a good player. I don't know what his ultimate ceiling is going to be, but he's gone through some tough times. Doesn't mean he couldn't fight his way into contention for teams in between 2022 and 2026. And our team, really, I feel like Greg has to balance the building for that World Cup where these players will be in their prime and you help kind of guide them and kind of counsel them with their decisions that they're going to be making now with that in mind, but also the short term. But I think it's really almost like two separate squads, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a good way of looking at it, because after this 2022 cycle, we're going to see a few players kind of leave the rotation. Like, I don't think Kellen Acosta is going to be a player that we're going to be relying on too much past 2022. Yeah. Same thing with Sebastian Legette. Christian Roldan is kind of up there in age. Like, he would be, I believe he would be like early 30s in Qatar. Yeah. So you got to imagine that he wouldn't be a part of that group moving forward. So there will be an opportunity for some of these young players to come through. But at the same time, the players ahead of them are very young. That's the big thing. That's
the crazy thing.
I saw somebody made a case for DeJuan Jones in my comment section saying, you know, this guy's a little bit better than you're giving him credit for. But the reality is at 24 years old, if you're competing for that left back position and the guys ahead of you are George Bello at 19, Sam Vines, who I think is 21, 22, Anthony Robinson is 24, and Joe Scally is 18 years old. If the guys ahead of you are already playing at a higher level than you and they're younger than you, it makes it really difficult to see any window for you to crack that side. And it's going to be like that for a lot of these players coming through.
Yeah, no, I think it's if you're ready, play. You know, and they always say like the next man up mentality. And I think one thing I will say with Greg is I do think he has done a good job of integrating, say, dual nationals or young players into camps, even if you're just like getting a look. You know, I can nitpick, and in the end of the day, no one's going to remember that Bosnia friendly, you know, but like in my nitpicking, I'm like, I want to see Jonathan Gomez play like 90 minutes, you know, but like at the end of the day, like the relationship that they build and the like relationships in camp, like those will have really long-term like effects more than him having like a 7.6 rating in like FotMob or whatever. Like at the end of the day, like we're going to remember what kind of was grown from those moments, you know, like, but a lot of that's going to be behind the scenes and a lot of that's in games too, but like, yeah, it's an interesting situation to like deal with for these young players.
I think that the paradigm for the U.S. men's national team has shifted quite a bit, and a lot of fans are still living in that paradigm from 2 years ago where it was, you know, like you said, flip the Monopoly board over and then start all over, and pretty much anybody who is 18, 19 years old could get a shot. Like, the reality is the Tim Weah that played against Italy in that friendly in the Sarakin era, it was France, I'm sorry, in that Sarakin era, does he have a better resume than like Conrad De La Fuente does right now? They were pretty much equal in that regard.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to say. So Tim Weah definitely got opportunities that Conrad De La Fuente is not going to get just because of...
But it was like benefiting of the time. It was just a very unique situation.
Yeah, and I see a lot of people calling for, specifically in that Bosnia game, a lot of people calling for like, just play the young players to see what you have there. And we're no longer in that position. It's not really where the paradigm that we're finding ourselves in right now. It's not building for the future. The future is pretty much here. You know, if you want to see Jonathan Gomez or like Caden Clark is another one. Why didn't you start Caden Clark in that eight position just to kind of see what you have there? Well, in that eight position, you also have a 18-year-old Yunus Musa who's starting for the national team. You also have a 19-year-old, I believe he's 19, Gianluca Busio, who's pushing for that position.
Yeah.
Tanner Tessman's a teenager, I believe.
Gio Reyna can play centrally.
You have these
like, realistically,
very, very young
players. Like, way down the depth chart, unfortunately. And I do, like, I try and just try and look at it kind of balanced, like, take my fandom off. Because I when I'm watching that game and I'm, like, seeing Roldan, like, didn't he play like 90 minutes? I'm like, oh my gosh, like, can you please, like, I need like mouthwash for my eyes, like, clean it. But like, at the same time, there is a master plan here. And the whole time that camp was introduced as a chance to keep some of these guys fresh. And it's way more likely that you're going to see a Roldan, not only obviously in this preparation camp, but in the final roster, as much as like, we don't want that to happen. So I get from that point, but yeah, it's just kind of a weird balancing act to be, because like, yeah, we want to be building towards the future and we want like the most exciting players, but maybe like, maybe where they're at right this moment, like maybe they're just not there. And
that's the tough thing to swallow, is maybe they're not quite there yet. Maybe, maybe Kellen Acosta does offer more than some of these players right this moment. Yeah. You know, maybe he does. I mean,
As a six, I think I can agree, but as an eight, hell no. No.
yeah. As an eight, not so much. And you know, there's a few players who I was really excited about in MLS this year, and like Aiden Morris, who got injured right before the season, which I think
I completely forgot about him, man.
Yeah, and Moses Nyman is a player that I'm really excited about. But you know, maybe their window is 2026, and the dream of 2022 is just there's just not enough time for them to make it. And speaking of not enough time, we're kind of running into the end of this particular podcast. So, Justin, I want to thank you so much for coming on. Can you take a minute to plug your channel and where people can find you?
Oh, bro, thank you so much for having me on. This has been so much fun. So I'm Justin Amanut. I run a channel called Soccer House. Most we focused on like match day vlogs. We've been to the Canada-US game, Costa Rica, US, Mexico, US. If you haven't checked those out already, it was just so much fun to create little, honestly, I'm doing it for fun. Like, I'm a big fan. Like, I wanted to find a way to document it. And yeah, they're up there. It's Soccer House. I don't know. And yeah, let's just get excited. We have games coming up finally. And our players, the winter break, the cold winter break of Germany and Italy, it's gone. We can watch Weston McKennie play again. There's a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah. Depending on when you see this, I mean, we've got a huge weekend coming up that could potentially see the debut for Ricardo Pepi. Ooh. We could be seeing a debut for Daryl DK. A lot of players playing. It's just
there goes my whole weekend.
Yeah, man. And like you said, we've kind of been living in this world where like, we were so spoiled with all these games happening right, left, and center. Then all of a sudden we get this winter break and we're just kind of focused on the Premier League and Pulisic and Sargent. And that was kind of a bummer. Wanted to
see all of our players are playing defense.
Yeah. That whole thing. So anyway, Justin, thank you so much for coming on. Make sure you guys go follow him on Twitter and check out his content. For Justin, my name is Sam and this is the Yank Report. All right, man, clap twice for me. All right. Actually, I'm supposed to say, this is the Yank Report presented by Bet Online. Let me just make sure I got that audio. I'll probably dub that audio in.
You gotta get the sponsors happy, bro.
Yeah. All right, man. I appreciate it.
Bro, this was great. Thank you for having me.
For sure, man. You have a nice rest of your vacation.
We'll do. I'll get back to Nashville soon. Get back to that better lighting. All right, man. Peace.
All right, later.